we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead. There's a common theme at this point of in a post-pandemic world, and that is that the delayed reaction to a lot of these ailments that people are having, and we see the theme in a lot of questions and emails that are sent in, but where things happen, you know, a couple, 3-4 years later, and folks are wondering, they're aghast, surprised, and some of these things can be absolutely fatal. That's one of the big points we'll bring up today, friends, on America Out Loud Pulse. It is indeed Malcolm Out Loud here along with my co-host,
Dr. Peter McCullough, here for the long haul.
So this one particular case, and I'll just start off here because you're going to get wound up on this one. I know you are. But let me give you the first few thoughts to this. So this is a case that you did the preprint on this. I've seen your name on it, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This was about a 47-year-old male who died unexpectedly from acute pulmonary hemorrhage 555 days after the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccination primary series. But before the death, he exhibited symptoms of a mild respiratory infection despite a healthy medical history, no medication use. The patient's condition rapidly deteriorated, and he experienced severe respiratory distress, followed by the cardiopulmonary arrest with evidence of profuse pulmonary bleeding. Now, this gets really interesting and gruesome both with the medical examiner. What happened to this case?
This was stunning. This happened in Texas. Now, this is a man who worked for a big corporation. And in 2020, they didn't have a mandate, but it was in 2021. He was getting all these emails to take the shots in order to come into work. He's got to supervise his team there. So he takes the shots. And, you know, we looked up in the paper. We looked up how bad is my batch. And we found that the shots that he got were in the top 3% of all the lots. There's like over 4,000 Pfizer lots, Malcolm. The top 3% for complications, including deaths. So he wasn't the first guy to die with the vaccines that came out of his lot. And the story is he felt a little sick after shot one and shot two. And then, you know, after that, he went about his business. And as I recall, he never conclusively got COVID. And then it was, it was in the, it was in 2023. So he takes the shots in 2021. And about a year and a half later, 2023, he gets like a viral illness. So him and his wife get it together. They think it's a brief viral illness. And he has three daughters. He coaches one of the daughters' basketball games on a Saturday morning, and he noticed his voice getting hoarse. And while he was yelling and what have you, and he says, you know, I just feel a little bit hoarse. And he had to coach another game in the afternoon for another daughter. So they were all watching TV with the girls in the living room. And he said, I'm just going to lay down and take a nap. So he's taking a nap while the girls are watching TV. And, you know, one of the daughters notices gurgling and breathing abnormally. And before you know it, it's a full-blown cardiac arrest. The girls call the mom. Mom was away at the time. She was getting her nails done. She goes racing home. She finds her husband basically unconscious, full cardiac arrest. She tries CPR. They call 911. And the blood starts pouring out, Malcolm, starts pouring out of his mouth. Oh. It's all over the carpet. And the girls are horrified. The mother's horrified. The paramedics come. They try to get the airway tube in. They give reversal agents for the bleeding. They can't stop the bleeding. Long and the short of it, he dies of this hemorrhagic death, a cardiopulmonary arrest. And they do an autopsy. Now, Malcolm, the lungs on autopsy ought to weigh about under 250 grams per lung. His lungs were over 1,000 grams filled with blood.
He suffocated.
The lungs filled up with blood as rapidly, I think, I've ever seen in a clinical case. Now, he had some heart blockages, but the arteries weren't closed. It wasn't, I don't think they were accurately quantified. He had just gone up 10 flights of stairs for a fire drill 4 days earlier. He's in his 40s. The best we can put this together is this is a delayed cardiopulmonary arrest due to acute pulmonary hemorrhage, and it was so quick it took his life. What blew me away, Malcolm, is I recently was contacted by another woman, a young mother, and she had a husband again in his 40s, the same exact death. The same death. He actually died in front of his daughter. Same thing. Paramedics came, blood's everywhere. I just finished talking to her last night. So, I'm blown away at this. These late presentations, I testified at the U.S. Congressional panel saying, listen, 5 years is kind of the minimum window of concern. It may be 15 years afterwards, but now we have examples of 2 or 3 years afterwards, vaccine-associated cardiac arrests, in this case with pulmonary hemorrhage.
Yeah, you've been talking about a 5-year cycle, but you're thinking it's longer now? So that's what you're saying?
Yeah, the FDA in the genetic guidance says even out to 15 years. So I put that 5 to 15 years after the last shot. We are seeing, I saw today a woman who's developing a clear complication. It's 2024. She had one Johnson & Johnson shot in 2021. We're clearly 3 years out now, and these problems are emerging.
Yeah. Now, this blood pouring out of the mouth, how have you seen that before to that case, what you were talking about here?
I've never seen it. The spike protein from the vaccine can cause clotting and bleeding. It's very interesting. And sometimes clotting and bleeding at the same time. The blood coagulation system is so complex that you can actually have clotting and bleeding at the same time. And this has been described, well described. In fact, there's a syndrome called VITT, vaccine-induced thrombotic thrombocytopenia, which is characterized by simultaneous blood, bleeding and clotting. It was first described with AstraZeneca and Janssen, where people were developing blood clots in the brain, the central cavernous venous sinus. In fact, there's an official FDA warning on this. So they would be clotting in the brain, but then they'd be bleeding diffusely out of their nose and intestines and skin. Systemically, that VITT, it was a vicious syndrome. It's associated with the development of antiplatelet factor 4. With VITT, there are 380 peer-reviewed manuscripts on this occurring after the COVID-19 vaccine. 300 manuscripts describing the blood tests, the cases. And so there must be thousands, if not tens of thousands of cases. For blood clotting overall, there's 1341 peer-reviewed papers describing multiple series of patients with blood clots. Yeah. Big citations there are Faxova, the Global Vaccine Data Network, 99 million people. Mann recently described splanchnic vein blood clots in the veins draining the intestines, of which there's a high fatality rate. Buell recorded blood clots. Have been in close proximity to the vaccine. And then lastly, Fran and Proctor describing the death rates of these abnormalities, 5 to 10% death rate with the blood clots. These bleeding episodes, let's hope we don't see more cases of this, but I communicate with a paramedic last night. A lot of our listeners know him, Harry Fisher. So Harry was on my show, actually, America Out Loud, and Harry became a big social media influencer. And he asked his paramedic friends, are they seeing this? And the answer is, yeah, they're seeing this. Cardiac arrest. The unusual thing is the blood starts pouring out and they can't stop it.
Yeah. That's why I question it. Because it did, from the way you were describing it, there was nothing normal about it, obviously, from your description. That's what I was saying. Have you ever seen anything like that? I'm thinking back over the period of time now where I hear you talking like in the past where you've said, there are so many unknowns. We just don't know what we don't know. I remember people asking questions and sending them in like a couple, 2-3 years ago, even. About what if, how come, and how long, and will we? And you said, we don't know. There's so many unknowns here. we'll have to get there when we get there. And you, that was a common theme, you know, that we talked about over a period of time. You know, I'm just thinking here, listening to this case here and these others, as these ailments and disasters continue to surface, don't you think that, Dr. McCullough, this is kind of becoming an industry in itself, kind of, you know?
It's clearly creating, the vaccines have created an entire new healthcare market.
Right.
I just can't imagine the costs. My last patient, right before I got on the microphone here, is a gentleman who, you know, he was genetically predisposed. We proved that for heart failure. But, you know, he takes two COVID shots. He goes into heart failure. He requires a heart catheterization, drugs, cardiac MRI, more care, seeing me, multiple other doctors. I mean, his health bills have to be through the roof. And heart failure is not an easy thing for a guy to have in his 40s. And I'm convinced if he didn't take the vaccine, he never would have gotten there. But we are discovering that for a lot of conditions, there is a genetic predisposition. That is, the genetics are in the background. They're perfectly fine. And it took the COVID vaccine to really cause the manifestation of disease.
Because it wreaks havoc on their bodies. I mean, it's wreaking total havoc. I mean, this thing is so destructive, this bioweapon here. You know, I'm thinking of this first guy you brought up here with this story with the blood and all. And I mean, he's coaching his daughter. He has three daughters. I mean, three obviously young daughters are coaching him. They see the death of his dad. All of this happens all because this guy pays with his life. I mean, pays with his life, and his family pays with his life because he gave in to the pressure. He gave in, as you described it moments ago here, he succumbed to the relentless pressure. Like I said, get in here, get your shots. And there were a lot of people going through that. Man, those people are, I'll tell you what, they're sorry today they had them, aren't they? You know?
They are, but let me make a few points. For the first case that's written up, and this is first author is Nick Holscher. He's our McCullough Foundation fellow now, just graduated from University of Michigan. And we wrote it up with the permission of, you know, the surviving spouse. And I met with her one-on-one. I reviewed all the autopsy information. We had the pictures. We had everything. So this is up close and personal. She came to me a year after this happened. He took the shots in 2021. He dies in January of 2023. She comes to me in January of 2024. And I asked her, I said, you know, tell me about that. Why did you wait? She goes, Dr. McCullough, she goes, I'm now a single mother. I'm trying to raise three daughters. I was totally unprepared for this. And you know, I was in a total state of shock, just trying to pick up the pieces for a year before I could try to get my bearings on this. You know, a year. I mean, think about this. You know, you're a mother and, you know, good marriage and everything's great. And then you know, one day, like the light just turned off and this man loses his life. Now, she has actually secured a lawyer. And they're using our report that you're looking at. We'll put the link to this in the show notes. They looked at, he's using that report as, you know, a valid scientific analysis of what's happened. And the case is going to be pursued against the big corporate employer. Now, here's the interesting thing. He took the shots when there was no mandate. Right. So, you know, the company can't say, well, the Biden administration made me do it. Or HHS maybe do it. No.
Just randomly pressuring him and coercing him, as you were describing, but not mandated. The company didn't mandate it. They were forced.
The company didn't mandate it. See, if the company mandated it, they could have said, well, we did
Why
it.
Why did because, he do it then? If they were
well,
just...
here's the thing. This is what I learned. You know, there was innumerable emails and other things to prod people to take the shots by these big corporate employers. And what the attorney told me, he said, what we're looking for is the legal standard is substantial encouragement.
Yeah.
Did the employer substantially encourage the employees to take the shots, you know, without knowing if they were going to be safe or effective? And they couldn't have known at that time.
Yeah.
And the answer is, yeah, they did more than substantially.
There it is. There it is. There's the legal basis for that right there.
Right. And so it's interesting. So it turns out that not having a mandate for the legal case is good because the legal standard of care is substantially encouraged. Now, if the employer said, listen, you know, we have this, we're offering it, it's your choice, you know, we're not encouraging or discouraging.
Right.
If they were neutral, that'd be different. Now, when there's mandates, I imagine the first thing the employers will do is they will say, well, listen, we were just following what the government told us to do.
Right, right.
So I'll tell you another thing that just happened, Malcolm, along this line, is I was asked to be an expert witness in a case where there was a longstanding employee of a hospital. She was an ER nurse. She had worked there for 20 years, healthy. She never had COVID before or after all of this. And as this was coming down, the hospital does have a mandate. They said, listen, you have to take the shot. But this is before the Biden administration healthcare mandates kicked in. And she applied for a religious exemption. She said, I have a longstanding, firmly held belief that I don't want anything injected in my body that's going to change me or change my genetics. She went to her pastor and he backed her up on this. She had even evidence of other health decisions where it was clear she didn't want things injected in her body. That was her own personal belief. So this is well documented. And the hospital, while they accepted some other religious exemptions, for some reason they denied hers. And this became a showdown, and then they fired her. Well, you know, years later, she launches a lawsuit. I'm an expert. I was deposed for the hospital hired two law firms, and they deposed me for like 6 hours, just absolutely brutalizing me in this deposition. You can see how hard the hospitals want to defend their position. And I held in there. I held in there and said, listen, they didn't have to do this. They could have just granted her an exemption. She was not an imminent threat. You know, they try to say, well, she's a threat. She could have spread it to somebody. No, she's been healthy the whole time. She didn't spread it to anybody. And I stuck to my guns. I held it out. And sure enough, the next day, the hospital calls the lawyers call each other and they said, we'll settle. So she's going to get a settlement. I don't know how much.
But it sounds like there'll be a lot of settlements in the future, probably, based on this.
That's what I'm telling the listeners, that listen, if the hospitals had mandates before the Biden mandates kicked in, so you can't blame the government. They were jumping the gun.
Yeah.
Or if they didn't have a mandate and they just substantially encouraged before the federal mandates, so we're talking anything that happened in the summer of 2021, before the fall of 2021, that looks like that's going to be legal open game for the employer. The employer should have stayed out of this.
Amen.
And if the employer really started to do this and people were harmed, they lost their jobs, they're injured, death,
employers didn't stay out of it, and the colleges didn't stay out of it, and the institutions didn't stay out of it. None of them did.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that the attorneys are going to have to get active now. And as some cases are one. Each one is a struggle. You can see how hard these hospitals, I just can't imagine the amount of money they invested to do this. And in the deposition, Malcolm, you'd crack up because a deposition is kind of a battle. I've done many of them. And, I've had countless hours of training, on-the-job training. I've been involved in as a witness in federal cases with big dollar amounts behind it prior to COVID. So I know how to handle myself in a deposition, but I got the attorney kind of twisted around. And then he literally started extolling the virtues of the vaccines. And I said, counsel, you sound like a vaccine commercial. So he caught himself, and they're supposed to be unbiased. They're supposed to be getting to the truth.
Yeah.
These guys don't want to face the truth.
Yeah,
they don't want to face the truth. The doctors don't want to face the truth.
That's right.
And
you're not afraid to call them out either, and that's cool. That's cool. You know, this case report I'm looking at here from this one here in the preprint. How many of these case reports, just roughly, how many of these kind of have you done like this sort of thing?
On cases
like this,
I've published several of them in the peer-reviewed literature there can be cases or collection of cases. The React 19 is the best resource, by the way, react19.org. Yeah. They've chronicled now well over 4,000 of these. Now, some of these will have several hundred cases within a single report.
Yeah, well, this is great. This is the fact that you did this and that I'm looking at this now, I'm just thinking, you know, that you put this all together in a case report, not only to help the widow and the family, what have you, but to document it historically, right? I mean, it's a multiple thing. Yeah, this is very, very cool stuff. And I just, you continue to amaze me. And I just think this is well done. And I'm looking at this and looking at, I clicked on your name and then you go to your other things you've got going on here with the foundation. This is cool stuff. Peter, very, very good.
Well, you know, people look at it. We'll put it in the show notes. I have to warn you, we do show a picture of the man who's died and what it looked like when they put him in for the autopsy before they cleaned him up. And you can get a sense he was in a sea of blood, Malcolm. There was blood all over his face. The blood must have been pouring out. It just kind of dried on his face. Now, ultimately, they cleaned him up.
Yeah.
But what a mess. And then the lungs, we have a picture of the lungs. The lungs ought to be pink. They ought to look like pinkish to whitish sponges, very light. The lungs should be, his lungs are sopping wet, heavy, and filled with blood, both of them. They look like red water balloons. I've never seen a pulmonary hemorrhage like this before.
Incredible.
Something happened. Something. Now, maybe in his case, you know, I thought about it. That maybe the viral infection that he had, because he clearly did, his wife admitted him and his wife had something, maybe it triggered some type of immune response that, you know, knocked the platelet count down or something along these lines. And then, you know, he started hemorrhaging in the lungs. It's possible. I do find it interesting, the second case, who I just talked to the wife last night, not yet published, she also mentioned, she goes, you know, I was kind of sick with a virus. I was sleeping elsewhere. My husband was sleeping with my daughter. And then that's when he has this cardiac arrest and hemorrhages. He literally, I guess, must have been some type of little struggle. He falls off the bed, clunk, and his daughter is horrified to see her father in cardiac arrest. That was the second case. Yeah. So both cases affect relatively young mothers in their 40s with children. And, you know, as more families sustain the damage of what's going on here, I think they will be looking for some legal remedy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can see why you're moved by this. Before we get to the mic here today, when you sent me that message, I can see exactly why you're moved by this. And listen, you know, I don't know if the wife will hear this, but God bless you and your family, and truly, truly, deeply sorry that this has happened to your family and all of these people that this has struggled with. It breaks my heart, really, truly, it does. And all she can do is pick up the pieces now and move forward, as you stated. And
right now, Malcolm, you know, one of the things I referred her to, and I'd like to tell our listeners about it, is that there are some legal gatherings that are happening. COVID legal update. I'm typing it in right now.
Okay.
And these COVID legal updates are happening periodically. The next one is in June, and they're open meetings. You can go. I'm trying to find.
But when you find it, maybe we can put those links into the post here as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's they're COVID litigation conferences, and they're happening, and you know, a variety of attorneys. The one who invited me to speak at one, his name is Warner Mendenhall. I can't go because I have a conflict, but it's going to be in June of 2024. They've had a series of these, and again, open meetings with dozens and dozens of attorneys that go. But I have to tell you, I did encourage these spouses to say, listen, why don't you show up, interview some attorneys, they're all going to be there, you know, why not, and discuss the possibility of of whether or not there's a case. And so I really think that people should look at this. it's very hard to be fishing through attorneys in telephone books. And if you showed up at a conference and you paid a couple hundred dollars, you got a hotel room and you sat in for a day or two, you could learn a lot about
you'll learn a lot. That's exactly it.
And
you always learn a lot from those kind of things.
Yeah, that's the advantage of the face-to-face.
Yeah, definitely.
The Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, they've hosted one of the last ones, but I'm trying to get the exact one. But what I'll do is I won't hold up the show today for this, but I'll see if I can find.
That'd be great. We'll definitely put all this on the post if you find it. No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But we haven't talked about this before, but to start to get a little bit more active in a legal perspective, a lot of our listeners, Malcolm, they want to know, what can I do? What can I really do in this great crisis? And especially if one has been, you know, damaged on this.
Right.
And the answer is, I think, as lay people, go to these, they're occurring about once a quarter. They are COVID legal updates, and they're well attended. There's hundreds of people there. There's a series of stage presentations, but it's a great way to show up. And I think, honestly, if I was a spouse, a surviving spouse, I think I'd be interviewing some of the attorneys there and say, listen, I've got a potential case. This is where I am. Oh, and by the way, Malcolm, for both of these ladies, I said, listen, get everything. Get the paramedic run sheet. Get an autopsy. Both cases I mentioned, they got autopsies. Get all the background medical conditions. When was the last time they were seen? The list of drugs they were taking. You know, get a full medical case assembled. For most people who are previously healthy, it's not hard. They didn't have any medical problems. They took the vaccines, and then they went along, and then, boom, one day disaster struck.
This is a sad chapter of humanity in my eyes, what we're talking about here now, but you're right. Everything you say is correct. People have got to react accordingly. Staying on this theme a moment, Dr. McCullough, let me dive into a couple of things here, transition to the Q&A, but onto the same spirit of what you're talking about here with these delays and these reactions. And this one comes from Lindsay. Dr. McCullough, how long after the vaccine have you seen aneurysms, bleeds on the brain, or heart attacks occur? And what is the factor of the boosters with this?
Again, it's as long as we can see right now, but for sure, 3 years after the booster.
And it could go out further. You don't really know at this point, right? It's an ongoing event, right?
We don't know. I mean, we've measured spike protein, which is the antibodies against the spike protein, which is a surrogate of, is the vaccine still actively, you know, producing spike protein in the body? And the answer is 3 years later, we've seen levels that, you know, are off the Richter scale.
Yeah.
They're over, you know, the upper limit of the assays is 25,000. They're over 25,000. It should be less than one. So they have a ton of spike protein in the body, Malcolm.
Oh, yeah, incredible. This is a common theme. Here's another one, a little juxtaposition on the second question here, but this is from Gert. Dr. McCullough, how long after the vaccine have you seen blood clots occur, but do they dissolve? Will everyone have them? And would you say 3 years is in the clear? There you go.
No, I've seen them, new ones at 3 years, definitely not in the clear. Right. Let me tell you another wild card here. If someone's taken the vaccine, they can be fine. And you know what? They get COVID and they get another exposure to the spike protein and inflammation and get sick and boom, they end up with a blood
clot. So you're talking about a re-injury again. And so now, so you're saying, I'm hearing something different than what I've heard previously. You're saying this re-injury for somebody who is severely damaged internally and you may not know it can be a very problematic event.
For sure. See, they're already loaded with spike protein. Now you superimpose the real infection and some inflammation and boom, blood clot.
Yeah. And you hadn't said that before, like quite like that, but now you're seeing with all the damage that that's a reality of what we're seeing here. So,
What the implications are this, Malcolm, people who have taken the vaccine, you know, getting COVID again is not only, you know, failure of the vaccine, but it's high risk for complications, even not that severe a case of COVID.
Amen.
Stroke, heart attack, cardiac arrest, blood clots, neurologic damage. So what I tell everybody is that, listen, you have to be in prevention mode. We have to prevent COVID-19. And that's where our use of the nasal sprays and gargles really comes in.
Yeah, you're right to talk about this in the way that you are. I see it now. I for one, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, I get a little panicked, not for me, but if it's my wife and, you know, or something happens to somebody around us, as you know, Peter, that they, you know, they've had a serious case of it and then they get sort of a reinfection, you sort of get a little traumatic. It's a traumatic event because you just don't know what you don't know and you don't want to take a chance. So, all right, this next one's from Gordon. In the same theme again, do you think these irregular cardiac PET scans return to normal? I know that the change is to do with the metabolism, which is a form of the cardiomyopathy, but would you say that if a normal ECG or EKG would be an indication that the heart is healthy again?
Well, clearly normal, everything, right? So normal EKG, normal cardiac ultrasound, normal blood test. And if you go further, normal cardiac MRI, normal PET, you know, getting a bunch of normal tests is certainly reassuring. I'm not suggesting that we need to do all those tests, but the finding that the listener points out to, published by Nakahara and colleagues, where there's almost a uniform change in everybody who took the vaccine with a shift from free fatty acids to glucose on cardiac PET scanning, is disturbing. It's an abnormal pattern. What I would infer is that over time, the body must get rid of the spike protein. We know it's greatly assisted by natokinase, bromelain, and curcumin, McCullough protocol-based spike protein detoxification. We'll only know when people have serial PET scans, do things come back to normal. I can tell you with cardiac MRI, when there's enough damage to see in an MRI, which is far greater than what you'd see on a PET scan, a lot of those, sadly, are not coming back to normal. The published studies suggest maybe half or more are not normalizing. So when there's a big patch of damage, it's a kind of a 50-50 on whether or not that's going to recover. So the earlier we start on detoxification, the earlier we start on treatment. Remember, colchicine is our standard to treat myopericarditis. It's standard. It's a drug we used to use for gout. It's a form of a prescription drug. It influences inflammation or white blood cells in the chest that invade the heart during myocarditis. Malcolm, colchicine just got FDA approved for a new indication, and that is to reduce the risk of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, heart attack, wow. So general heart disease. So, you know, prescription colchicine should be skyrocketing all over the world now because, A, it's generally preventive against heart disease in general, and it's covering the vaccine-related heart damage. So that's spelled colchicine, colchicine. We used it extensively in the acute treatment of COVID. It reduced mortality. Now it's proving to be very useful.
Wow. How do we get that out there more? That's big information right
colchicine
there.
Colchicine is very big. My Substack Courageous Discourse has a lot on colchicine. You know, I'm prescribing a ton of it every day. A lot of people should be on it. Fortunately, it's generic. It's very inexpensive.
But it's prescription only, you're saying?
It's prescription only, colchicine. Okay. But it's really complementary to the natural products we're using in spike detoxification.
Now, let me ask you this through, just curious, I don't know, but through the wellness company with their wellness thing, the doctors, well, do they prescribe it there, do you know?
Yes, for sure. And wellness company, by the way, has their own pharmacy now. So they don't even have to, you know, try to use outside pharmacies. Yeah. So they'll prescribe it. It'll get shipped to you the next day.
Okay.
And having their own pharmacy has been great. By the way, Malcolm, I had a pharmacist decline colchicine for a patient.
Because?
Because they said, what's it for? Well, the doctor gave it to me for I have a COVID vaccine complication. And as soon as the pharmacist heard the word COVID, shut it down. I had pharmacists refuse colchicine in the acute treatment of COVID, just like the declined hydroxychloroquine.
Do they have a right to do that specifically?
No, but you know they've been doing it all the way through. So when the pharmacists hear anything regarding COVID, anything we can help people in the acute infection or even after the vaccine or long COVID, they're denying treatment.
You know, I knew they were doing it for HCQ and ivermectin, but these bastards, they just don't notice.
Well, here's the thing. Wellness company has pulled through because now they have their own pharmacy. So forget using Amen. CVS or Walgreens.
I love
don't
it.
Need to.
I love it.
Just they're going to fill the prescription and it's go time.
This is huge. So, I didn't know this. Yeah. When did this happen? The pharmacy.
It just happened in the last month or so.
That's why I didn't know about it yet. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So this is big news. Wellness company is going to pull through on all the drugs people need.
Awesome.
It's a great alternative to this completely corrupt medical system.
Amen. We've been seeing it. Now I want to ask you about this, the base spike detox, because you got me thinking a moment ago when you were talking about this and this other case here. So with all these folks now who have preconditions, they have been hit with COVID, there's internal problems that may not show up for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Like, we don't really know. We don't know what the future is. How could we know? We don't have a crystal ball. And but with the base spike detox, you mentioned something about, would it help those people? In other words, without being severely injured at the moment or knowing that you're severely injured, how much of the people in that other space should be taking this? I never thought of it that way, the base.
I think a large amount of the population should be taken. If you've had COVID, you've had the vaccine or both, serious cases, every time we look, we find spike protein in the body. You know, to avoid getting burned with a late complication, natto kinase, 2,000 units twice a day, bromelain 500 milligrams a day, curcumin 500 milligrams twice a day, starting doses. You know, this is kind of healthy anyway. The Japanese use natto kinase to prevent heart blockages, reduce stroke. Bromelain's a natural supplement derived from the stems of pineapples. Curcumin is an anti-inflammatory, works great for arthritis, derived from turmeric. So isn't it interesting, this very unnatural spike protein and virus out of this Chinese biosecurity lab, our answers are natural products.
That's right. All right. Let me tell folks now then that all of this, you go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's what I need to tell you, period, end stop. There's a whole new page for the wellness company. It's really well done. You did a great job on this. Go to the ad for the wellness company in the shop. You'll see Dr. McCullough's, in fact, image there as well. But you'll get 25% off the first order. And, you know, they're trying to help folks out, get into this thing. And there's a lot of benefits here. It's a lot of stuff. But what I want to do is tell you not only about the base spike detox that people need to be looking at now based on all of this. I mean, I'm just learning a lot here myself here. But it's the ultimate detox bundle, the bromelain, the spike support, the turmeric. It's right here. And the package of three. If you bought all that separately, it'd be far more, but the discounted price comes down to $89.25, and then you get the, and I assume that's with the, that's with the 25% off. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. That's with all three combined.
Malcolm, I told a patient today in the office, you know, one of the supplements additionally I recommend to all the heart patients is the heart support supplement.
Amen.
On Wellness Company,
and that's right below that on the page I'm looking at. Yeah. It right now, the healthy heart. Yeah,
but you know what, the Out Loud discount, now use Out Loud in the promo code when you buy, or buy it through America Out Loud shop, and that 25% discount is the best in the industry. It's the best discount of any media affiliate with the Wellness Company.
And you know, they've held true to that. That was the arrangement we made when we did this arrangement, and they've held true to it. And I asked them to hold true to it. We that was a big condition, and they've been very honorable to do that, Peter. You know,
well, I thought it was amazing. You know, you were able to negotiate that. You know, everyone else is getting 10 or 15% discounts, but to get a 25% discount, and you're going to, you know, let's say buy Ultimate Spike Detox, Heart Support, and a few others. It really is terrific. Now, if you're going to buy more than a few products, I think people really ought to look at getting a membership.
That's what I want to talk about now, the One Wellness, because it dawns on me now with you talking about the pharmacy and all. I just got so excited about hearing that because of the people who are getting, you know, twisted around here from these mad pharmacists who think they can control the output. You know, it's crazy. But the One Wellness is you get it all. You get, what's really cool about that plan is you get all visits and stuff with the telemedicine you need, but you also get a lot of these products that are part of the plan. Is that right, Dr. McCullough, I believe?
That's right. So, you know, the supplements are really unlimited. Right. And for instance, let's say the spike detox. So some people have really loaded with spike protein. We actually double the doses. So you're going to go through the bottles pretty quickly. Get One Wellness. It's really worth it. Malcolm, your discount takes that price way down. Honestly, it's going to be cheaper to get One Wellness than try to buy the supplements.
Because you get them with it. You get them with it.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, you know, it's just better to get a One Wellness discount. Then you're already in. So let's say you need telemedicine for some reason, need some medications adjusted, need your blood pressure medicine renewed, or it's already covered. That's all part of it.
Yeah.
And so it's a great deal. The One Wellness, people who have diabetes, hypertension, medical problems, they're taking advantage of it. But I'm thinking those who want a more natural approach, and if you want to go more natural, it means taking more supplements. If you're going to take more than just a few of them for the wellness company, it is financially better to get One Wellness. You won't have to be nickel and diming bottle by bottle. You're just covered. Just pick what you want, go to the checkout, and you got it.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the site now. They really did a great job on this. And if you go to the top there under memberships and you click One Wellness membership right there, in fact, you'll go to the page and you got to remember, use the code out loud. It lists out at $199 a month, but you'll get it for less. You get that 25% off. Yeah. So I think it drops it to $149 or so. Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
What, for $149 a month, Malcolm, to basically get as many supplements as you want and have your telemedicine visits covered. And if you need a medicine refilled, get it done.
Yeah.
$149 a month.
Yeah.
That's an amazing value.
Yeah, they did a great job with this. There's no doubt about it.
People know about this.
Yeah,
people know. Listen, you go pay some copays in the office. You go pay some pharmacy fees when you go to the pharmacy. Yeah. Try to order some stuff on Amazon. You go past that easily.
Yeah. So click the One Wellness membership. That's how you get it. And I'm glad we focused. I wasn't planning all that, but I'm glad we did. And it fits right into this narrative of these delayed situations that are happening here. All right, we'll take a quick pause right now, friends, and we'll be back with some great questions here in Q&A 111 here on America Out Loud Pulse.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is XLEAR.com.
Okay, fantastic, friends. We're back with you here on America Out Loud Pulse. It's Malcolm Out Loud here along with Dr. Peter McCullough. And so this is a Q&A 111. We talked a lot up front in the broadcast about these delayed symptoms, and then disaster happens. And had several cases. If you missed that, you just tune in and go back and listen to that. Some pretty good stuff there, and some heavy lifting for folks that may get caught off guard, and we don't want to see that happen to anybody for sure here. Let's dive into some more questions here on Q&A 111 here, and this one is interesting. It plays a little bit to that theme as well, but this is from Ralph. Dr. McCullough, I listened to Dr. Paul Thomas speaking about the mRNA turning the cells in spike protein machines and that it will eventually shut down the immune system. This is why we are seeing rises in shingles and cancer. Does this mean everyone's immune system is compromised or destroyed? And the people, and the people are fine now will be in a few years? Not sure what they're asking there, but yeah.
Here we go. We simply don't know. Out of my Substack this week, a paper by Karygopoulos, and I'm one of the authors on the paper, demonstrating that for sure the immune system is altered by these vaccines.
Exactly.
And some people, it may be altered enough where they are more prone to shingles and infections and problems, Epstein-Barr virus reactivation, cytomegalovirus reactivation, you know, wounds that won't heal. Others, you know, there's such a variation in the kind of the human embodiment that they, you know, won't be affected at all. Now, the Karygopoulos paper, in addition to papers by Anguis and Bustos, as well as by Spiekler, Wiseman, and others, are suggesting that the mechanisms are there, that the vaccines could drop the immune surveillance against cancer. So remember, the immune system is fighting off early cancer cells in our body all the time. You probably formed a cancer cell right now, Malcolm, and your immune system just snuffed it out. Well, if there's a genetic vaccine that is taking down your own immune system against cancer, then a small cancer cell could multiply and get bigger and bigger, and next thing you know, becomes a tumor. That's the hypothesis behind what we call turbo cancer. And turbo cancer is a rapidly progressive severe cancer that develops in someone who took COVID-19 vaccines, or it's the reactivation of a cancer that was previously in remission, in part because our own immune system defending us against cancer has been taken down by the vaccines.
Yeah, it's the whole key to the whole thing, as I've said for years, the healthy immune system. We all got to fight for that. We got to work hard at it every day. And I keep telling listeners out there, I tell you all, can't take your health for granted. You just simply can't. Not today. This one's from Connor. Dr. McCullough, I was watching a doctor online discuss Kevin McNernan's McKernan's work, and she reported that there was a secret code in the vaccines that tells the body to produce the fibrous clots we see being pulled out of people. Can you please elaborate on this, since I find this terrifying? Wow.
Oh, it is. You know, I've had Kevin McKernan on my show.
Right.
The genetic code in Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Janssen is the code for the Wuhan spike protein. Now, the spike protein is that spicule or spine on the surface of the virus. It's about 1,200 amino acids long. It's got some glycosylated side chains. And when that gets into the body with the vaccine, it's not attached to the ball of the virus. The spike protein is like a spear. It's circulating through the bloodstream. Now, it always finds other spike proteins, and it twists like a snake into what's called a trimer. It trimerizes. And then this goes out, and it does stick to red blood cells. David Scheim, who's been on the McCullough Report, former NIH researcher, believes about 40% of the spike protein is physically attached to red blood cells. The red blood cells begin to stick together one in another, and then a blood clot forms. The spike protein in that trimerized position folds and becomes what's called amyloidogenic. Amyloid is a term for a folded protein in the human body. And when proteins fold, Malcolm, they create a rubber-like substance. So it, before COVID, there were conditions called amyloidosis. I'm a cardiologist. We had amyloidosis of the heart. It's pretty rare. There's about 32 proteins that can abnormally fold. It's usually genetic. But when we had somebody die of an amyloid heart condition, we took the heart out of the body, you basically could throw it at the ground. It would bounce up like a Super Bowl.
Wow.
That's how rubbery the tissue is.
Incredible.
So what medical examiners and coroners have been pulling out of the body are these large rubbery blood clots.
They look like, a lot about that. Yeah.
They look like calamari. They're whitish.
Exactly.
And when they're analyzed, they have spike protein in them from the vaccine or from COVID. And the spike protein has been folded and it's amyloidogenic. That's what's going on. Now, listen, I've seen patients who are alive who come in my office and they'll have a blood clot from the ankle to the hip. But they're alive. So the body is dealing with this. And this is my experience. We put them on blood thinners like Eliquis or Xarelto or Pradaxa or Coumadin. And the blood clots don't dissolve. When someone goes on blood thinners, Malcolm, all you are doing is we're stopping additional clotting. We're not actually dissolving the clot. We're relying on the human body's own dissolving system called the fibrinolytic system to dissolve the clot.
Right.
So the problem is the spike protein is so clot forming and the clots are so rubbery and well formed and hard that our body's own system is not dissolving them. That's another reason why we're relying so much on fibrinolytic or clot busting substances like nattokinase in wellness company spike support and bromelain, which is part of the trio, the ultimate spike detox. Both nattokinase and bromelain, in theory, should be breaking up these large rubbery blood clots, but you can imagine a pill that you take or a capsule, a little bit gets in the bloodstream, it's going to take a long time to dissolve these.
It makes sense what you say there. So, okay, this next one is from Terrence. The people who had a really bad reaction to the vaccine are perceived to have had a really bad batch that's super loaded with mRNA. What I don't understand is how people are dying from the vaccine 2-3 years later after the vaccine with a weaker reaction.
You know, what it may be is people take these shots and it takes a long time to produce enough spike protein in the body to generate a blood clot or cause a pulmonary hemorrhage or cause heart failure or nerve damage. It may be the fact that the genetic machinery, even if it's a batch that's not such a dangerous batch, it may just take a long time for it to produce enough spike protein to accumulate. And I think it gives us great hope, honestly, that the spike detoxification should work. Kevin McKernan, who we've already cited, Kevin believes that human RNA ACEs should break down Pfizer and Moderna. At some point in time, our enzymes ought to catch up with those guys and clear out Pfizer and Moderna. Then it really becomes a game of getting the spike protein out of the body with nattokinase and bromelain and curcumin. There's some additional products that should be tested. Sereptase, we have one paper on that. That looks attractive. Another one is lumbrokinase. There may be some other oral enzymes that can help dissolve the spike protein. Okay. But let me tell you, the batches really matter. I had one patient who he previously had bypass surgery. He had a weak heart, so he had a biventricular ICD, and he had a form of a pacemaker in. But he was a consultant. He's functional, and he's fine. He's out, you know, taking his medicines, and he's out doing consulting and what have you. And the COVID vaccine mandates come in. He works for a big consulting company. He takes one COVID shot, Pfizer. And Malcolm, he goes into florid heart failure, is crash lands at a major medical center. And he goes full life support. He's in cardiogenic shock, needs ECMO. And the bottom line is he needs a heart transplantation. That's how bad it was. So they take out his old heart, take out his ICD. He gets transplanted, gets a new heart, gets a stroke with that infection. Mm-hmm. And now he's on the road to recovery. Well, his wife just texted me. She goes, we looked up his batch. He only took one Pfizer shot. He goes, he's in one of the worst batches. There's already been many deaths out of his batch. And you know what? I checked his spike levels. This is now 3 years after he took the shots, Malcolm. His antibodies against the spike protein, LabCorp extended range, over 25,000.
So that's because it was a bad batch, you say?
Yeah. So my theory is these bad batches must have been super loaded with messenger.
Because they could be as bad as taking four shots from what you're saying.
Right. Because think about their lipid nanoparticles.
Yeah.
They aggregate.
Yeah.
You know, lipids, if you ever see the oil that's on top of, let's say, pea soup, or the oil that's on top of a soup, you know, oil doesn't distribute very well. A ton of coalesces. It blotches up.
Yeah.
The lipid nanoparticles, in theory, maybe they blotch up, and some people got a whole bunch of messenger RNA, and some people got hardly any, because they were rushing to make these vaccines. They'd never been inspected for the amount of messenger RNA in each vial. Every country has been pressed on this. Please open the vials and tell us how much messenger RNA is in them. And nobody will do it, not even the U.S. government.
All right, this next one's from Jess. Has everyone vaccinated been sterilized?
I would say no. I mean, there's been plenty of vaccinated young people who've, you know, gotten pregnant and conceived. I don't think everyone is sterilized, but there are multiple sources of data on our Courageous Discourse Substack. It's out there. Nick Holscher, the McCullough Foundation fellow, just had a post on the McCullough Foundation Twitter account that there are more and more papers showing that fertility is impaired, both male and female fertility, in those who took the shots.
Okay. All right. And this one's last one is from Casper. Hi, Dr. McCullough and Malcolm. Thank you for your work, and long may you continue to be a great success. God bless you, Casper. In Denmark, the leader of the Conservative Party died suddenly of an intracerebral hemorrhage. Mm. He was vaccinated, but I don't know how many he took or when his last one was. Based on your knowledge, how long after the vaccine have you seen these type of deaths? My follow-up question regards the base spike detox. Is it possible that the base spike detox could cause these issues as well, due to the nattokinase and bromelain being blood thinners?
Well, again, we're back to the first case. So this guy has an intracranial hemorrhage and dies. Clearly, it can happen 3 years after the shot. Now, the spike detoxification is slowly getting rid of spike protein over time, but it does have the risks of bleeding when bleeding occurs. Now, they don't cause a spontaneous intracranial hemorrhage. Okay. However, if blood pressure was sky high and a blood vessel burst in the brain, they can make the bleeding worse. If one is on the detox and they get a head injury in a car accident, it can make bleeding worse. So again, it's going to be a balance, but the clinical strategy is to detox the spike protein so we never end up with the burst blood vessel or the aneurysm rupture or the intracranial hemorrhage. And all I can tell you is I've now had experience with thousands of patients. I've had a couple minor bleeding events with bleeding, you know, bruising in the skin. And I had one more serious bleeding event in a patient who had alcoholic liver disease, and he went into the hospital throwing up blood. Turns out he didn't need a transfusion. We stopped the supplements, things settled down. And, you know, the bleeding is probably more attributed to the alcoholic liver disease. But the point I'm making is these products do work as blood thinners. They have caveats. We're using them in addition to prescription blood thinners like Eliquis, Xarelto, Pradaxa, and Coumadin. But like anything else, Malcolm, but like we tell people, we have to do our own research, talk to our doctors. Yeah. Everything has risks and benefits.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta dissolve that base spike detox. Gotta get it out of there, man. Can't have the buildup. That's what's going on. That's the problem right there. This was a great, great conversation today, man. This was a great show. I think you all learned a lot. I know I did as well. It was awesome. Really helping folks out here. And these delayed problems are something to really focus on, which was the theme of this conversation today. That's it. That's a wrap here, friends, and Q&A 111 and all of this great conversation on the delayed complications here. Thank you for joining us on the mission here on America Out Loud Pulse. Always a beacon here.